My name is Kate, and I've spent my entire life in a small town nestled in the heart of Wisconsin. Growing up, my dad would often mention this mysterious entity he referred to as the backyard beast. However, he never fully divulged what it was until I reached middle school. Before I delve into the spine-chilling tale, let me provide a bit of background. My dad's life took a tragic turn when he was just 16. A drunk driver's reckless actions robbed him of his left leg, rendering him wheelchair-bound. Despite this immense hardship, he persevered, working a full-time job on the third shift to provide for our family. Our home, a cozy abode nestled into a hill, was a duplex shared with my grandparents. They resided in the top half, while my parents occupied the bottom, which was connected to a garage and a patio facing a patch of dense woods. I was merely a child when the events transpired, but I am now 23 years old. Most of the details of that night were recounted to me by my aunt and father. My uncle, a high school football coach, frequently brought my aunt along to games. To acquaint herself with the area, she would park her car at our house and be picked up by my uncle after the game. On this particular evening, after dinner, my uncle dropped her off to retrieve her car. With only my dad and me at home, the atmosphere was quiet and tranquil. As my uncle's car disappeared down the driveway, my aunt settled in her vehicle, placing her purse aside. Suddenly, her eyes were drawn to the patio door, where a chilling sight awaited her. A towering figure loomed outside, its silhouette framed by the darkness of the woods beyond. My aunt's heart pounded in her chest as she realized the creature bore an uncanny resemblance to a dogman, or werewolf from folklore. Frozen in shock, she met the creature's gaze through the glass, unable to tear her eyes away. A shiver ran down her spine as the creature, seemingly aware of her presence, began to approach her car with deliberate steps. Overwhelmed by fear, my aunt buried her head in the steering wheel, praying for the nightmare to end. Minutes stretched into an eternity as she awaited her fate. Eventually, she mustered the courage to glance up, only to find the creature retreating into the shadows of the woods. With trembling hands, she ignited the engine and raced away, her heart hammering in her chest. Desperate to reach safety, she chased after my uncle, who was already a considerable distance ahead. In those days before ubiquitous cell phones, panic gripped her as she raced to deliver her harrowing tale. Nearly causing an accident in her frantic haste, she finally caught up with my uncle, who pulled over to confront her. Her words tumbled out in a torrent of hysteria, recounting the monstrous encounter that had unfolded at my family's home. Despite her frantic pleas, my uncle managed to calm her trembling form, persuading her to drive the remainder of the way home. Upon reaching our house, my aunt wasted no time in relaying the horrifying ordeal to my parents. Reacting swiftly, my dad ventured outside to investigate the woods, his senses heightened by adrenaline-fueled apprehension. Yet despite his thorough search, he found no trace of the creature that had terrorized my aunt. While part of me remains skeptical of my aunt's account, there's an undeniable unease that lingers whenever I gaze upon those shadowy woods. It's as though unseen eyes watch our home, waiting to emerge from the darkness once more. In my late 20s, I made the bold decision to move from Germany to a small town in Texas, where the population barely crested 177,000 souls. It was a considerable change, with the nearest major city a daunting 2-hour drive away. But fueled by my lifelong passion for animals, I quickly found my place in the community by becoming involved with the local Humane Society and animal shelter. However, my initial joy soon turned to horror when I discovered a dark reality. All wildlife in need of assistance was being euthanized due to the lack of rescue missions. Determined to make a difference, I embarked on a journey that would lead me down a path fraught with unexpected twists and chilling revelations. Thanks to the unwavering support of the Boy and Girl Scouts, I eventually managed to establish a fully equipped wildlife rescue center, complete with enclosures, cages, and all the necessary facilities. With a wildlife rehabilitation permit from the state secured after a meticulous inspection, I began my mission to save as many animals as I could. It was during this time that I first encountered Ron, a quintessential Texan redneck living in the rural outskirts. He was a rugged individual, relying on hunting and self-sufficiency, yet he possessed a kind heart. Richard would often drop by with extra food for my animals and lend a helping hand with various tasks around the shelter. Despite his rough exterior, he proved to be a loyal and dependable friend. As the years passed, Ron became an integral part of my life, sharing stories and personal struggles during his visits. While his demeanor could be gruff at times, he never failed to show me respect and courtesy. However, beneath his rough exterior lurked a dark secret that would shatter my perception of him forever. One fateful day, Ron arrived at the shelter in an altered state, having consumed psychedelic mushrooms. In his intoxicated state, he began to divulge horrifying tales of his past exploits, including disturbing acts of violence and racism. I listened in disbelief as he recounted abhorrent crimes against innocent victims, their grisly fates too dreadful to recount. Despite my initial disbelief, I confronted Ron about his chilling confession the following day, only to have him dismiss it as a product of his drug-induced hallucinations. Desperate to cling to the belief that my friend was not capable of such atrocities, I chose to overlook the glaring warning signs, convincing myself that it was merely a morbid fantasy concocted under the influence of drugs. Years passed, and Ron's life took a seemingly positive turn as he entered into a relationship with a woman named Meg. I was initially hopeful that he had turned over a new leaf, but my optimism soon turned to despair when I learned the truth about his monstrous nature. Meg confided in me, revealing the harrowing reality of her life with Ron, a cycle of abuse and manipulation that left her trapped in a nightmarish existence. Despite her dire circumstances, she remained silent out of fear for her life, enduring unspeakable horrors at the hands of her tormentor. My heart broke for Meg, but I felt powerless to intervene, paralyzed by the fear of confronting Ron and the uncertainty of what actions to take. Tragically, Meg's suffering came to a devastating end when she succumbed to cancer, her death shrouded in suspicion and unanswered questions. In the wake of Meg's tragic demise, I found myself grappling with overwhelming guilt and disbelief. How could I have been so blind to the evil lurking within my friend? As I delved deeper into Ron's past, I uncovered a chilling pattern of violence and deception, leading me to question everything I thought I knew about him. The shocking revelation of Ron's demise served as a grim reminder of the darkness that had always resided within him. As the truth came to light, I was forced to confront the unsettling reality that my friend, whom I had known for over 2 decades, may have been a cold-blooded killer. Haunted by the chilling specter of Ron's crimes, I grappled with the unsettling notion that evil could lurk within even those closest to us. As I struggled to come to terms with the horrifying truth, I found myself plagued by a lingering question that would forever remain unanswered. How could I have been so blind to the monster in our midst? This may be one of the scariest encounters I've had in my entire life. It was January, just a few days after New Year's, when my friend Ryan and I decided to go hunting. Ryan had agreed to join me as he needed a break from his girlfriend, with whom he'd been fighting. He drove over to my place with all his gear, and when he arrived, I was almost ready myself, just needing to grab the primer for my muzzle loader. Living in Minnesota at the time, we chose to hunt in one of the worst places we could have chosen, a cabin on Sturgeon Lake. As we drove, we discussed the hunting conditions and our plans for the trip. After a 2-hour drive, we finally arrived at the cabin, tired but excited for the hunt. Once inside, we settled in quickly, planning to set everything up properly in the morning. Ryan soon fell asleep, but I found myself unable to shake off a feeling of dread. It was as if someone or something was watching me through the window. I got up to close it, and as I reached for the latch, I saw 2 large yellow orbs glowing about 20 feet up in the trees outside. I strained my eyes to see what it was but couldn't make it out. Shrugging off the unease, I closed the window and returned to bed. The next morning, after making coffee, I woke Ryan up, and we prepared our gear for the day's hunt. We headed out to Willow River, a location we hoped would yield good results. Setting up our blind and waiting patiently, we eventually spotted some wildlife, including a doe with a fawn and a young buck. However, our peaceful morning took a disturbing turn when a foul stench filled the air. At first, we assumed it was just a black bear nearby and tried to ignore it, but the smell grew stronger, becoming almost unbearable. Then, emerging from the trees, we saw the most grotesque deer we'd ever laid eyes on. It was emaciated, its bones protruding from its skin, one antler snapped off, and the stench of decay emanating from it. Ryan whispered to me, suggesting we put it out of its misery, as it looked terribly sick. Agreeing, I raised my gun, aiming for a clean shot. But as I prepared to fire, the deer locked eyes with us and began moving closer, its gaze unbroken. In a split-second decision, Ryan aimed for its head and fired. The smoke cleared, revealing no sign of the deer, only a pool of blood where it had stood. Confused, we followed the blood trail, which abruptly ended at the base of a tree. As we searched the area, we found scratches on nearby trees but no trace of the deer. Disheartened, we decided to pack up and head back to the cabin. Upon returning, we found it in disarray, as if a tornado had torn through it. Ignoring the destruction, we couldn't shake off the feeling of being watched as we glanced towards the tree line outside. There, standing tall and pale, was a figure with broken antlers, resembling the deer we'd encountered earlier. Suddenly, a chilling scream pierced the air, a blend of human and animal sounds that sent shivers down our spines. Without hesitation, we raced to the truck and drove home as fast as we could. In the aftermath of that terrifying encounter, I delved into research, and the only thing that matched our experience was the legend of the Wendigo. Grateful to be alive, I couldn't shake off the feeling of dread that lingered long after that fateful hunt. As a father of two, my journey into parenthood began at the tender age of 17, with the unexpected arrival of my son. Despite the initial shock, his mother and I made a concerted effort to make our relationship work, eventually marrying and staying together for a number of years before parting ways. Despite the challenges, we remained dedicated to raising our son into the remarkable young man he became. Becoming a parent at such a young age was a daunting prospect, fraught with fears and uncertainties. The weight of responsibility hung heavy on my shoulders, and the specter of dread seemed ever present. There was a constant barrage of worries, from the mundane to the profound, encompassing everything from health concerns to financial struggles, and the ever-looming threat of unforeseen misfortune. Gradually, I found my footing in the role of a parent, learning to navigate the delicate balance between protection and allowing room for growth. I came to accept that bumps and bruises were inevitable parts of childhood, and that my duty was to mitigate risks while fostering independence. However, amidst the routine of everyday life, there were moments that jolted me back into the harsh reality of the world's dangers. One such incident occurred during the summer of 2002, when my son stayed with me for a few weeks while his mother vacationed with friends. On that fateful day, my son asked for permission to visit a friend's house, a request I granted before immersing myself in a DIY project at home. Hours passed, and I was engrossed in my task when the abrupt sound of the back door slamming signaled my son's return, much earlier than expected. An instinctual unease gripped me as I ascended the stairs to investigate. Entering his room, I found him huddled in a peculiar posture, as if seeking refuge from an unseen threat. Sensing his distress, I approached him with gentle reassurance, coaxing him to share his troubles. Tears streamed down his cheeks as he recounted a chilling encounter in the nearby woods. He and his friend had encountered a strange man, whose inappropriate inquiries sent shivers down my spine. The innocence of childhood had been marred by the sinister presence of a predator lurking in the shadows. As he recounted the ordeal, a surge of panic mingled with a fierce determination to protect my child at all costs. Suppressing my own fear, I focused on comforting him, assuring him that he was safe now. Without hesitation, I contacted the authorities, determined to prevent such a heinous act from befalling another child. Hours of agonizing waiting followed, fraught with uncertainty and dread. Yet, when the police arrived and initiated their investigation, a glimmer of hope flickered amidst the darkness. In the aftermath of the incident, our community rallied together, raising awareness of the dangers that lurked beyond our doorstep. The incident served as a sobering reminder of the fragility of innocence and the importance of vigilance. Though the perpetrator remained at large, the collective vigilance of our community served as a deterrent, instilling a sense of safety in the wake of adversity. Yet, the scars of that harrowing experience lingered, a constant reminder of the precariousness of parenthood. As I reflect on that tumultuous chapter of my life, I am filled with a profound sense of gratitude for the safety of my child and an unwavering resolve to shield him from harm. The ordeal served as a crucible, testing the depths of my resilience and reaffirming the unconditional love that binds parent and child. In the quiet moments that followed, I prayed for the safety of all children, fervently hoping that they would be spared the anguish that had befallen my own family. For in the crucible of fear and uncertainty, I discovered a newfound strength, the unwavering resolve to protect those I hold dear, no matter the cost. The day I decided to leave everything behind and head into the wilderness with Chief, my mind was a tumultuous mix of anticipation and a desperate need for solitude. Chief, a 150-pound Newfoundland with a coat as black as the night and eyes that mirrored the depth of the forests we were about to enter, was more than just a dog. He was a testament to survival, a creature that had mastered the harsh realities of the wild long before he became my companion. I had started my new job 6 months prior, a position that, while fulfilling, had drained me of my energy and spirit. The wilderness called to me as a place of renewal, a vast expanse where I could find peace and perhaps a part of myself that had been lost in the monotonous grind of daily life. Chief, with his extraordinary hunting skills and an instinctive understanding of the natural world, was the perfect companion for such an adventure. Our preparation for the trip was meticulous. I packed our backpacks with essentials, food, water, a tent, and of course my trusty 73 Winchester for protection. Chief seemed to understand the gravity of our journey, his demeanor serious and attentive as we loaded up the car and set off for Northern Ontario. The drive was long, 6 hours of asphalt that gradually gave way to gravel and dirt, leading us deeper into the heart of the wilderness. Upon arrival, a small green car in the parking lot barely registered in my mind. My focus was on the dense forest that stretched out before us, a boundless green sea that promised solitude and adventure. Strapping Chief's gear onto him and shouldering my own backpack, I felt a weight lift off my shoulders. The air was crisp, filled with the scent of pine and earth, a stark contrast to the stale air of my office. We set out, Chief leading the way with a confidence that only a creature of the wild could possess. We hiked for hours, the forest enveloping us in its serene embrace. When we found a suitable clearing, I set up camp, a small but sturdy tent that would be our home for the next 2 weeks. With camp established and a fire crackling, I grabbed my mini fishing rod, and together, Chief and I made our way to a nearby creek. The tranquility of fishing, the gentle flow of the creek, and Chief's quiet presence by my side were meditative. It was in these moments, surrounded by the untouched beauty of nature, that I felt closest to peace. Chief, ever vigilant, wandered off momentarily, likely in pursuit of some small game, leaving me to my thoughts and the occasional tug on my fishing line. His return, however, brought with it a reminder of the wild's unpredictable nature. In his mouth, he carried a deer leg, fresh and oddly twisted, as if it had encountered a force beyond the normal predations of the forest. I examined it briefly, unease creeping into the back of my mind, but chose to focus on the positive. Chief was a hunter, and this was his element. As night fell and we sat by the fire, feasting on fish and sharing a silent camaraderie, I couldn't help but feel a deep bond with Chief. He was more than a pet. He was a partner in this adventure, a being who had crossed the bridge from wild to companion without losing his essence. That night, as we retreated into our tent, the sounds of the forest lulling us into a cautious sleep, I reflected on the journey ahead. Little did I know, the wilderness had more in store for us than I could have ever imagined. The first light of dawn crept through the canvas of our tent, a gentle reminder that the wilderness never truly sleeps. Chief was already awake, his large frame silhouetted against the faint morning light, a silent guardian watching over our camp. I stretched, feeling the stiffness of a night spent on the ground, yet invigorated by the raw beauty of our surroundings. Today, we would explore deeper into the forest, but first, breakfast and a quick survey of our camp's perimeter were in order. As I boiled water for coffee, Chief wandered off, his nose to the ground, instinctively patrolling our temporary home. There was a comfort in his independence, a trust that he would alert me to any danger. Yet, what he brought back that morning would unsettle the foundation of that trust. When Chief returned, a deer leg clenched in his jaws, my initial reaction was one of mild annoyance. The wilderness was his domain after all, and such trophies were not uncommon for a dog of his skills and background. But as he laid it at my feet, something about the leg caught my attention. The break was clean, almost surgical, with an odd twist that seemed to defy the natural order of things. It was as if the leg had been snapped by something with intelligence, something that knew exactly how to dismember its prey. I pushed the thought aside, attributing it to an overactive imagination fueled by the isolation of the wilderness. We had come here to escape, not to conjure up monsters in the shadows. With breakfast finished and our camp secured, Chief and I set out to explore, the unsettling discovery momentarily forgotten. The forest was alive with the sounds of nature, a symphony of birdsong, rustling leaves, and the distant rush of water. It was easy to lose oneself in the beauty of it all, to forget the world beyond the trees. Chief seemed in his element, his movements graceful and assured as he navigated through the underbrush. I followed his lead, content to let the forest reveal its secrets at its own pace. Our exploration took us to a nearby creek, a place I had marked on my map as a potential fishing spot. The water was clear, the bottom visible and teeming with fish. It was a peaceful spot, a place where one could spend hours lost in the simple joy of fishing. Yet, as I prepared my rod, Chief's demeanor changed. He grew restless, his attention fixed on the dense foliage beyond the creek. Curious, I followed his gaze but saw nothing out of the ordinary. I chalked it up to the instincts of a hunter, perhaps sensing game that was beyond my perception. We spent the rest of the morning by the creek, the earlier unease fading as the day grew warm and the fish proved plentiful. It wasn't until we were making our way back to camp that I noticed something odd. Tracks, unlike any I had seen before, littered the path. They were too large for a deer, too erratic for a bear. A chill ran down my spine as I realized that whatever made these tracks was following the same route we had taken. That night, as we sat by the fire, the silence of the forest seemed oppressive, the darkness beyond our campsite impenetrable. Chief stayed close, his body tense, as if he too sensed the change in the air. Sleep was elusive, every snap of a twig or rustle of leaves sending a jolt of adrenaline through my body. The wilderness had revealed its darker side, a reminder that beauty and danger often walk hand in hand. And as I finally drifted off to sleep, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were no longer alone in these woods. The chill of the night air was sharper than usual, biting through my clothes as if heralding something sinister lurking within the shadows of the towering pines. Chief's restlessness had only grown since our unsettling discovery by the creek, and his unease had become my own. We ventured deeper into the wilderness, guided by the unwavering beam of my headlamp, in search of whatever had left those bizarre tracks near our camp. The forest at night is a different world, alive with sounds and movements that the daylight keeps hidden. I could hear the distant call of an owl, the rustle of small creatures scurrying through the underbrush. But beneath these familiar sounds, there was something else, a silence, oppressive and heavy, as if the forest itself was holding its breath. Chief moved ahead, his massive form a shadow against the faint moonlight that filtered through the dense canopy. His body language was tense, every muscle ready to spring into action. I gripped my tomahawk tighter, the cold metal a small comfort in the vast, dark wilderness. Then it came, a sound so chilling, so utterly foreign, that it froze me in my tracks. A roar, unlike anything I had ever heard, echoed through the canyon, a sound filled with pain, anger, and an insatiable hunger. It was followed by a scream, a human scream, filled with such terror that it pierced the night and lodged itself in my heart. Chief reacted instantly, his body coiled like a spring, low growls rumbling from his throat. I had heard him growl before, but never with this intensity, this sense of impending doom. We were no longer hunters. We had become the hunted. I barely had time to process these thoughts when another roar shattered the silence, closer this time, more urgent. Chief didn't hesitate. With a courage that defied his domesticated nature, he charged into the darkness toward the source of the sound. My instincts screamed for me to follow, to not let Chief face whatever horror awaited alone. The beam of my headlamp cut through the darkness, revealing glimpses of the nightmare we had stumbled upon. There, in a small clearing, stood a creature that defied explanation. A monstrous amalgamation of bear and wolf, yet neither. It towered on its hind legs, its body covered in tight brown skin and patches of thick fur, its eyes glowing with a malevolent light. It was focused on something, or someone, on the ground, oblivious to our presence until Chief's fearless charge forced it to turn. The creature's roar was deafening, filled with fury as it faced this new challenger. Chief collided with the beast with the force of a freight train, his body a missile of muscle and fury. The impact knocked the creature off balance, giving me a glimpse of the person it had been tormenting. A young woman, terror etched into her features. In that moment, Chief was more than a dog. He was a savior, a guardian of the innocent. With the creature momentarily distracted, I rushed to the woman's side, pulling her to her feet and urging her to run. The forest erupted into chaos as we fled, the creature's roars fading into the distance, overshadowed by the pounding of our hearts and the desperate gasps for air. Chief ran alongside us, his loyalty unwavering, his bravery a beacon in the darkness. As we emerged from the nightmare into the safety of a moonlit clearing, I dared to look back, half expecting the creature to be right on our heels. But we were alone, save for the stars and the night's chilling embrace. The woman, Jenna, was in shock, her words a jumbled mess of gratitude and disbelief. As we made our way back to camp, her story began to take shape, a tale of adventure turned nightmare in the untamed wilds of northern Ontario. That night, as we huddled by the fire, the forest around us no longer felt welcoming or safe. It was a reminder that there are things in this world that defy understanding, creatures that lurk in the shadows, waiting. Chief lay by my side, his head resting on his paws, but his eyes remained alert, watching the darkness. In them, I saw not just the loyal dog I had come to love, but a warrior, a protector of the wild, and the people who dare to venture into it. And as the fire died down to embers, I knew our journey had changed. We were no longer just visitors in this vast wilderness. We had become part of its untold stories, its mysteries, its legends. The first light of dawn was a balm to our rattled nerves, painting the forest in hues of gold and green, transforming the night's horrors into mere shadows of the past. Jenna, the woman we had saved from the clutches of that unimaginable beast, sat wrapped in a blanket by the fire, her eyes reflecting the ordeal we had all endured. Chief lay beside her, his vigilant gaze scanning the tree line, a silent guardian against the unseen threats that lurked beyond our camp. As the fire crackled and the warmth began to seep back into our bones, Jenna shared her story. She was an experienced camper, drawn to the wilds of northern Ontario for the same reasons I had been, a love for nature and a need to escape the confines of civilization. Her encounter with the beast was as unexpected as it was terrifying, a stark reminder that for all our advancements, humanity remains vulnerable in the face of nature's mysteries. The decision to break camp and head for the nearest hospital was made without hesitation. Jenna needed medical attention, and after the night's events, the forest no longer felt welcoming. As we packed up, Chief stayed close to Jenna, as if understanding that she needed his strength and reassurance. The journey back to civilization was a quiet one, each of us lost in our thoughts, processing the ordeal we had survived. The forest, once a place of peace and solitude, now felt oppressive, its secrets hidden behind a veil of beauty that could not be trusted. At the hospital, as Jenna was whisked away by the medical staff, the reality of what had happened began to truly sink in. We had faced something extraordinary, something that defied explanation. Chief and I were not merely survivors, we were witnesses to the unknown. In the days that followed, I found myself reflecting on our adventure, on the bond that had formed between Chief Jenna and me. There was a sense of camaraderie born from shared danger, a connection that went beyond words. Chief, in his bravery and loyalty, had proven himself to be more than just a pet. He was a hero, a beacon of courage in the face of the unfathomable. Jenna recovered quickly, her spirit undiminished by the ordeal. We stayed in touch, a trio bound by an experience that few could understand. She spoke of returning to the wilderness, of not letting fear dictate her love for the natural world. In her resilience, I found a renewed sense of purpose, a reminder that life, in all its forms, is a gift to be cherished and protected. As for Chief and me, our journey into the wild had changed us. We had sought solitude and found mystery, sought peace and found a battle. The wilderness, with all its beauty and danger, had revealed its true nature, a place where legends are born, and the line between the known and the unknown is forever blurred. In the end, the adventure was a testament to the strength of the human spirit, to the bonds that form in the face of adversity, and to the mysteries that lie waiting in the heart of the wilderness. Chief and I returned home, not just as survivors, but as guardians of a story that would live on, a reminder of the wild's untamed power and the courage it takes to face it head on. In January of 2023, my life took a turn into the realm of the unexplainable. As someone with Native American heritage, I've always held a deep respect for the stories passed down by my grandmother. They were not just tales to me. They were a testament to the mysteries and spirits that roamed our world, unseen by most but ever present. It was during this time that we had welcomed a new member into our home, a dog whom I'll refer to simply as Al. Our nightly routine involved a walk, which often turned into a playful chase after the local chickens. That particular night, however, held a different air about it. The sky was shrouded in clouds, hiding the moon and stars I so dearly wished to see, adding a layer of disappointment to my mood. The usual suspects, our local chickens, were nowhere to be found, likely deterred by the cold and the darkness that had settled in. The wind was fierce that night, its howling almost drowning out the usual nighttime chorus of squirrels scampering in the trees. Then, without warning, Al became tense, her focus shifting towards our shed. The wind ceased abruptly, and a silence enveloped us, a silence I knew all too well. It was the kind of silence that foretold the presence of a predator or a stranger in the vicinity. Living in an area known for its mountain lions, I was on high alert. Yet nothing could have prepared me for what awaited. As Al's interest in the shed became apparent, I lifted my gaze and was confronted by a sight that haunts me to this day. Looming before me was a figure, gigantic in stature, easily towering over 9 feet tall. Its silhouette was all I could make out until my trembling hands managed to illuminate it with my phone's flashlight. The creature before me was emaciated to the extreme, its bones and ribcage grotesquely visible beneath its matted fur. parts of its flesh were torn away, revealing gaping wounds. Its arms, unnaturally long and ending in claws stained with a dark crimson substance, hung by its sides. Its legs bore an eerie resemblance to those of a deer, yet distorted in their length and thinness. The head, too, was deer-like, but covered in sparse fur and patches of bare skin. The eyes, small and black, pierced through the darkness, exuding an aura of malice. The antlers, reminiscent of a majestic buck, appeared battered and worn, as if they had been through countless battles. In that moment of terror, Al broke free from her leash and dashed towards the safety of our home. The creature's attention snapped towards me, a sharp, involuntary shriek escaping my lips as I dropped my phone in panic. My other dogs, Ben and Carl, sensing the danger, came charging, their barks echoing through the silent night. This jolted me out of my frozen state, propelling me towards the house as my grandmother's voice reached my ears, calling out in concern. Once inside, I dared to glance back, only to find the creature retreating into the darkness of the woods. Collapsing at the threshold, the stench of decay and spoiled milk assaulted my senses, nearly overwhelming me. My grandmother's repeated inquiries about what I had seen were met with gasps as I struggled to regain my composure. The look of terror in my eyes was enough for her to understand. Her words, "You saw it, didn't you?" confirmed that this was no mere figment of my imagination. Nearly a year has passed since that fateful encounter, but the memory remains vivid in my mind. Each time I venture outside alone at night, the feeling of being watched creeps over me, a constant reminder that whatever that creature was, it might still be lurking, waiting in the shadows. Charles McCullough had always felt a magnetic pull towards the untamed beauty of the wilderness, a yearning to capture its fleeting moments through the lens of his camera. The vast expanses of America's national parks were his canvas, the natural world a gallery of wonders waiting to be explored. At 19, with his whole life sprawled out before him, like the uncharted trails of Crater Lake National Park, he set out from Eugene, Oregon, armed with nothing but his camera and an insatiable curiosity. The winter of 1975 had draped the Pacific Northwest in a blanket of snow, transforming the landscape into a monochrome world of silence and solitude. It was in these conditions, challenging yet invigorating, that Charles planned his expedition. His friends had warned him about the dangers of trekking into the wilderness alone, especially in the dead of winter. But for Charles, the allure of Crater Lake's frosted vistas was irresistible. He had meticulously prepared for the journey, packing warm clothing, a sleeping bag capable of withstanding frigid temperatures, and enough food to last him the 4 days he planned to be gone. Before leaving, Charles had made arrangements with Dorothy, a friend in Eugene. He told her of his plans, ensuring someone would know of his whereabouts. "If I'm not back by February 1st, he had said, "raise the alarm." His voice carried a lightness, betraying no hint of the seriousness of his instruction. Dorothy nodded, understanding the wilderness's unpredictability and the importance of her promise. On the morning of his departure, Charles caught the bus south to Roseburg, intending to hitchhike the rest of the way to Crater Lake. The recent snowstorm had dumped between 5 and 10 feet of fresh snow across the region, making travel treacherous. Cross-country skiers had reported conditions so soft and powdery that they sank up to their waists, even on skis. Charles, however, was undeterred. His spirit thrived on adventure, on the challenge of pitting himself against the elements. His last known sighting was at a small, inconspicuous store at Dry Creek, where he stocked up on a few last-minute supplies. From there, he vanished into the white expanse, leaving behind a trail that would soon be swallowed by the snow. Days turned into weeks, and Charles did not return. Dorothy, true to her word, contacted the authorities. Search teams were dispatched, combing the vast wilderness for any sign of the young photographer. They scoured the northern section of Crater Lake National Park, where they believed Charles might have entered. Despite their efforts, employing skis, snowmobiles, and even airplanes, Charles McCullough remained elusive, a ghost in the snow. As February faded into March and then April, hope dwindled. The vast, indifferent wilderness of Crater Lake held its secrets close, revealing nothing. Charles's disappearance became a haunting mystery, a stark reminder of nature's dominion over man. Yet, even in his absence, he left behind a legacy of wonder and a cautionary tale of the wild's unforgiving nature. His adventure, born from a passion for the great outdoors and the desire to capture its beauty, had ended in a mystery that would puzzle and intrigue those who followed in his footsteps for years to come. In the rugged expanse of Crater Lake National Park, nature conceals its secrets behind a facade of breathtaking beauty. When two hikers, veering off their intended path, stumbled upon a set of remains in a secluded canyon, the mystery of Charles McCullough's disappearance cracked wide open. The discovery, more than a year after Charles vanished, reignited a search that many had presumed would remain cold forever. The remains, disturbingly sparse and puzzlingly positioned, lay scattered near Bybee Creek. Among them, a backpack, partially buried under the detritus of seasons past, holding keys that would unlock more than just the doors to a Volkswagen back in Virginia. They unlocked the door to a mystery that had perplexed the local community and Charles's family for far too long. The initial elation of discovery quickly gave way to a haunting realization. The way Charles died, or rather, the state in which he was found, raised more questions than answers. His belongings, or the lack thereof, painted a grim picture. A pair of pants with the foot bones still inside, positioned on a log as if the rest of him had simply melted away, told a tale of an inexplicable demise. Theories abounded. Was it a tragic misadventure in the unforgiving clutch of winter? Or did the park's whispered secrets, spoken of in hushed tones by the Klamath people, play a role in his untimely end? The mystery deepened with every clue unearthed, every theory proposed. Charles's father, driven by a relentless need for answers, became a fixture in the park. He combed through the area where his son was last seen, piecing together the final chapters of a journey cut tragically short. The authorities, while thorough in their search, found themselves at the mercy of the park's vastness and the element's capricious nature. The investigation was mired in the physical and bureaucratic wilderness, the latter often as impenetrable as the former. The search efforts, now infused with new vigor, explored the rugged terrain with a fine-tooth comb. Yet, with each passing day, the mystery only deepened. Clothing fragments, a can of fruit cocktail, an open lid from a can of Vienna sausage. These items, Charles's favorites, suggested a presence, a life being lived, until suddenly, it wasn't. As the community rallied around the McCullough family, offering support and sharing in their grief, the park's eerie silence stood as a stark reminder of nature's indifference to human sorrow. The search for Charles McCullough, now intertwined with the park's lore, became a tale of caution and curiosity, a story that would be whispered around campfires and pondered by those who dare to explore the wild. In the heart of Crater Lake National Park, where beauty veils danger and legends blur with reality, the search for Charles McCullough intensified. It became more than a mission to uncover the truth. It became a journey into the unknown, a test of resolve against the unfathomable mysteries that lay hidden beneath the snow and shadowed by ancient trees. The park, with its deep, still waters and silent forests, held its secrets close, challenging those who sought to unravel the fate of a young man who ventured into the wilderness, never to return. The rugged wilderness of Crater Lake National Park, with its deep, pristine waters and ancient forests, has long been a place of awe and mystery. It's a landscape that whispers of ancient battles and harbors legends passed down through generations. As the search for Charles McCullough continued, the eerie atmosphere of the park seemed to thicken with each unanswered question about his disappearance. The Klamath people, native to the lands surrounding Crater Lake, have always revered the lake as a sacred site, imbued with the spirits of their ancestors and the power of their gods. Legends tell of a cataclysmic battle between Skell, the spirit of the sky, and Lao, the spirit of the underworld, which formed the lake in the aftermath of their wrath. To the Klamath, and to many who've heard their tales, Crater Lake isn't just a body of water. It's a portal to another realm, a place where the veil between worlds is thin and spirits roam free. As the investigation into Charles's death delved deeper into the heart of the park, strange sightings and unexplained phenomena began to emerge from the shadows. Rangers and search teams reported feeling watched, hearing whispers on the wind that seemed to have no source. Some spoke of seeing shadows flit between trees, too quick to be human, too silent to be animal. The mystery of Charles McCullough's fate became entwined with these anomalies, fueling speculation and fear. Was his disappearance merely an unfortunate accident? A young man lost to the elements? Or had he stumbled upon something ancient and powerful, something that the park was determined to keep hidden? One night, as the search teams gathered around their campfires, a seasoned ranger shared a story that chilled the bones of all who listened. Years ago, he said, another hiker had vanished without a trace, only to be found months later, his body positioned in a ritualistic manner that no animal could have orchestrated. Like Charles, his belongings were scattered, his fate a mystery. The ranger spoke of other disappearances too, each one adding another layer to the park's mystique. The more the searchers learned, the more they began to feel as though they were not alone in their quest. The wilderness around them seemed to watch, to listen, and to wait. The stories of the Klamath, once dismissed as mere folklore, took on new significance. Could the legends hold the key to understanding what had befallen Charles McCullough? As the days passed, the search for physical evidence of Charles's last moments became a journey into the heart of the park's mysteries. Each clue, each unexplained occurrence, seemed to lead further from the truth, into a realm where science and logic held little sway. The searchers found themselves grappling not just with the harsh realities of nature, but with the possibilities of the supernatural, where the legends of the Klamath and the anomalies of the park wove together into a tapestry of mystery and fear. In the shadow of Crater Lake, where spirits of the past linger and the land holds its secrets close, the search for Charles McCullough became a testament to the power of the unknown. It was a reminder that, in some places, the world is not as we know it, and that some mysteries are not meant to be solved. In the vast, silent expanse of Crater Lake National Park, the search for Charles McCullough pressed on, each day deepening the mystery that surrounded his disappearance. As autumn bled into winter, the park's majestic beauty belied the frustration and desperation of those who sought answers. Charles's father, a man whose grief had hardened into resolve, became a fixture among the towering pines and snow-capped peaks, his presence a silent testament to the unfathomable loss of a son. The investigation, once buoyed by the discovery of Charles's remains, now found itself mired in ambiguity. The clues that had been uncovered, the fragmented remains, the scattered belongings, the eerie absence of critical items, seemed only to lead further into a labyrinth of speculation. Was it merely the elements that had claimed Charles, or was there a more sinister force at play within the park's impenetrable wilderness? Charles's father scoured the area where his son's remains were found, each step a search not just for his son, but for the truth. He challenged the authorities to look deeper, to see beyond the easy explanations, and consider the park's storied past, its legends, and the unexplained phenomena that seemed all too common within its boundaries. The local community, once distant observers of the tragedy, now found themselves drawn into the narrative. Whispers of cover-ups, of secrets held tight by park rangers and officials, began to circulate, fueled by the McCullough family's unyielding quest for answers. The park, a place of natural wonder, had become a character in its own right, its silence as telling as the stories it refused to reveal. Investigators faced not only the physical challenges of the terrain, but the bureaucratic morass that often accompanies such high-profile cases. Efforts to piece together Charles's final days were hampered by jurisdictional disputes, by the vastness of the park, and by the creeping realization that some questions might never find answers. Yet, amidst the uncertainty, there remained a sense of purpose, a collective determination to unearth the truth, no matter how elusive it might prove to be. Alternative theories about Charles's fate began to take shape, each more speculative than the last. Some posited that he had succumbed to the elements, his final moments a tragic testament to the wilderness's unforgiving nature. Others whispered of foul play, of dark deeds carried out in the park's secluded corners. And still, others looked to the supernatural, to the legends of the Klamath people, as a possible explanation for the inexplicable. As the investigation wound its way through the tangled underbrush of fact and fiction, Charles's father remained undeterred. He knew that the truth, like the park itself, was layered, complex, and often hidden from view. He understood that the wilderness does not give up its secrets easily, that it demands respect, perseverance, and above all, a willingness to confront the unknown. In the end, the search for Charles McCullough became more than an investigation into a young man's disappearance. It became a journey into the heart of mystery itself. It was a reminder that, in places like Crater Lake National Park, where the natural and the supernatural seem to converge, the truth is often stranger than fiction, and the answers we seek are sometimes found in the places we least expect. As the seasons shifted over Crater Lake National Park, the mystery of Charles McCullough's disappearance settled into the landscape like the first dusting of snow atop Mount Scott. The search had wound down, leaving behind a trail of unanswered questions and the lingering specter of a young man who had ventured into the wilderness, never to return. Charles's father, after months of tireless searching and ceaseless questioning, had become a familiar figure against the backdrop of the park's towering pines and silent waters. His journey, born of unimaginable loss, had transformed him into a symbol of resilience, a man who faced the unfathomable depths of nature's indifference with unwavering determination. The community around Crater Lake, once distant spectators to the McCullough tragedy, found themselves irrevocably changed by the ordeal. They had watched as the park they knew so well became the center of a mystery that defied explanation, a place where beauty and danger were inextricably intertwined. The legend of Charles McCullough, whispered around campfires and shared among hikers, became a cautionary tale, a reminder of the wilderness's power and unpredictability. Investigators, for their part, were left with a case file filled with more questions than answers. Despite their best efforts, the truth of what happened to Charles in the vast expanse of Crater Lake National Park remained elusive, a puzzle missing too many pieces to ever be complete. Theories abounded, from the plausible to the fantastical, but none could fill the void left by Charles's absence. As the final chapter of this sorrowful tale unfolded, it became clear that the legacy of Charles McCullough would not be defined by the circumstances of his disappearance, but by the indelible mark he left on those who sought to uncover his fate. His story, a stark reminder of the wilderness's allure and danger, inspired a newfound respect for the natural world and its hidden perils. Charles's father, though he never found the closure he sought, came to understand that some mysteries are beyond human comprehension, that the wild places of the earth hold secrets not meant to be known. He found solace in the beauty of Crater Lake, in the peace that comes from accepting the unknown, and in the knowledge that his son had pursued his passion to the very end. The legacy of Charles McCullough, woven into the fabric of Crater Lake National Park, serves as a testament to the spirit of adventure, to the bond between a father and his son, and to the enduring mystery of the natural world. It is a story that resonates with all who hear it, a poignant reminder that the wilderness, for all its beauty, is a place where the line between life and loss is as thin as the morning mist that dances upon the lake's surface. In the end, the mystery of Charles McCullough became a part of Crater Lake itself, a chapter in the park's storied history that will be told and retold, a haunting echo of a young man who sought the wild and found eternity. The city lights of New York were a stark contrast to the starlit sky I'd become accustomed to back home in Spain. My friends and I, transplants in this sprawling metropolis for the sake of law school, found ourselves yearning for a connection to something more primal, more natural. That's how we ended up planning a road trip, a chance to explore the North American wilderness we'd only seen in glossy magazine photos and travel blogs. It was Lisa, Anna, Charlotte, and myself, a band of adventurers, eager to dip our toes into the unknown. Our destination was clear, a road trip circling Lake Ontario, with the grand finale being a night in an off-the-grid cabin in upstate New York. The contrast between our daily grind in the city and the promise of solitude in the wilderness was intoxicating. We talked about it for weeks, planning our escape with the kind of meticulous detail only law students could muster. But no amount of planning could prepare us for what lay ahead. The drive was a blur of laughter, shared stories, and the occasional squabble over music choices. We were a mix of personalities. I, ever the adventurer, had convinced my city-bred friends of the merits of spending a night in the wild. Lisa shared my enthusiasm, her adventurous spirit undimmed by the concrete jungle we called home. Anna and Charlotte were more reserved, their excitement tinged with apprehension about what lay beyond the reach of cell service. As night fell and we neared our destination, the mood in the car shifted. The dense forest that flanked the road seemed to swallow the light from our headlights, casting everything in a deep, unsettling shadow. Our laughter died down, replaced by the hum of the engine and the occasional crackle of gravel under tires. It was then that we saw it, a lone campfire flickering in the distance, its light an eerie beacon in the pitch-black forest. No sign of life around it, just the fire, as if it was waiting for us. The sight of the campfire unsettled us. It was a stark reminder of how far we were from anything familiar. The GPS had long since lost signal, leaving us to navigate the last stretch with nothing but a map and my gut instinct. "We're close," I reassured them, though I felt the first stirrings of doubt myself. Finally, the cabin came into view, its silhouette a dark shape against the night. It was exactly as advertised, old, isolated, and devoid of any modern comfort. No electricity, no running water, just walls of old log wood and the promise of a night under the stars. Lisa and I took charge, determined to make the best of our adventure. We had both spent enough time camping in Europe to know how to get by without the luxuries of urban living. Inside, the cabin was as rustic as it gets. We used our phones to light the way as we explored, finding a couple of old flashlights and the fireplace that would be our source of warmth for the night. The wood was damp, the air inside the cabin cold and musty. But as I struck a match and coaxed a flame to life, I felt a surge of pride. Here we were, four friends from Spain, making a home in the wilderness of upstate New York, if only for a night. The rest of the evening passed in a blur of activity. I cooked pasta on an old stove, the flicker of the fire casting shadows on the walls. The girls prepared the sleeping arrangements, their laughter and chatter a comforting background noise. Outside, the forest was alive with sounds, but inside, we were cocooned in our own little world. As the night deepened and the others settled in, I stepped outside one last time, beer in hand, to take in the silence of the woods. The city felt a million miles away, and for a moment, I was content. Little did I know, the tranquility of this moment would soon be shattered, giving way to a night that would test us in ways we never imagined. The crackling of the fire was a small comfort as I sat alone on the porch, the darkness of the upstate New York woods enveloping me like a cloak. The others had retreated inside, leaving me to my thoughts and the final beer of the evening. I'd always found solace in nature, a stark contrast to the constant buzz of New York City. But tonight, the wilderness felt different, almost foreboding. I scanned the tree line with my flashlight, the beam cutting through the darkness, revealing nothing but the dense thicket of trees and the gentle sway of branches in the night breeze. The sound of the creek in the distance was a gentle reminder of the world's natural rhythms, a sound I found immensely comforting. That comfort, however, was short-lived. It started as a low rumble, a sound so deep and alien that it froze me in my tracks. "Not a bear," I thought. I knew what bears sounded like, and this was different. It was a roar, but not like any animal I'd ever heard. My heart raced as I stood, flashlight in hand, searching the darkness for the source. Then I saw it, a glimpse of something moving at the edge of the light. It was tall, taller than any man I'd ever seen, with a presence that seemed to command the night. For a moment, our eyes met, and I felt a chill run down my spine. This was no bear. It was bipedal, its silhouette barely visible against the dark backdrop of the forest, but unmistakably not human. Its eyes, reflecting the light from my flashlight, bore into me with an intensity that felt almost personal. I stood there, frozen, locked in a gaze with a creature of the night. Then, as quickly as it had appeared, it vanished, melting back into the darkness from which it came. Another roar echoed through the forest, sending a clear message. It was time for me to go inside. My legs moved before I could think, carrying me back into the cabin, where I locked the door behind me with trembling hands. The sense of safety the cabin once offered was gone, replaced by the stark realization that we were intruders in a world we didn't understand. I didn't mention the encounter to the others, not wanting to alarm them. Instead, I lay in the bunk bed downstairs, listening to the sounds of the night with heightened awareness. Every creak of the cabin, every whisper of the wind seemed ominous. The logical part of my brain tried to rationalize the experience, to dismiss it as a trick of the light or the product of an overactive imagination. But deep down, I knew what I had seen was real. The night passed in a restless vigil, every sense on high alert for any sign of the creature's return. But it didn't come back. Or if it did, it remained a silent observer, hidden in the darkness beyond our fragile sanctuary. As dawn broke, the terror of the night began to fade, replaced by a weary resolve. We had survived the night, but the encounter had left its mark on me. I knew then that the wilderness held secrets, ancient and untamed, and that sometimes it's better not to disturb what lies in the shadows. Morning couldn't come soon enough. The first light of dawn seeped through the cracks of the old cabin, casting a pale glow over the room where I lay awake. The terror of the night's encounter had ebbed, leaving behind a residue of unease that clung to me like a second skin. As the others began to stir, I pushed myself out of the bunk, my movements mechanical, driven by the desire to put as much distance between us and the cabin as possible. "We should head out early," I suggested, my voice betraying none of the night's turmoil. The others, bleary-eyed and unaware of the true reason behind my urgency, nodded in agreement. Breakfast was a silent affair, each of us lost in our own thoughts as we packed up and prepared to leave the wilderness behind. The drive back to New York City was a stark contrast to our journey upstate. The conversation was sparse, the usual banter replaced by reflective silence. The landscape rolled by, a blur of green and brown, but my mind was elsewhere, replaying the encounter over and over, trying to make sense of what I had seen. Back in the city, the familiar sights and sounds of urban life felt strangely comforting. The endless hum of traffic, the cacophony of voices, the concrete jungle stretching as far as the eye could see. It was all a welcome return to normalcy. Yet, the experience in the woods lingered, a shadow at the edge of my consciousness. In the days that followed, I found myself drawn to research, scouring the internet for any explanation that might shed light on the creature. But the more I searched, the more I realized that some mysteries were meant to remain unsolved. The wilderness held secrets, ancient and wild, that defied the neat categories of the modern world. I shared the story with a few close friends, their reactions ranging from skepticism to belief. But as I spoke, I sensed that the true weight of the encounter was mine alone to bear. It was a reminder of our place in the natural world, of the thin veneer of civilization that separates us from the untamed forces that lie just beyond our understanding. As time passed, the fear faded, replaced by a sense of wonder. The encounter had been a glimpse into the unknown, a moment that challenged my perception of the world. It was a reminder that, despite our advancements in technology, we are not the sole masters of this planet. There are creatures and places that exist beyond the reach of our control, reminders of the wildness that once ruled the earth. The wilderness, I realized, is not a place to be conquered, but to be respected. Our brief intrusion into its domain had been a lesson in humility, a reminder of our insignificance in the face of nature's vast and ancient mysteries. And so, as the memory of that night in the upstate New York woods fades into the tapestry of my past, it remains a pivotal moment in my life, a reminder of the awe and respect that the natural world commands, a respect that, for me, will always be tinged with a hint of fear. For in those untamed spaces, where the light of civilization grows dim, lies the true heart of the wilderness, beating with a rhythm as old as time itself.